Congress and the president set our policy. Protest Congress. Protest the White House. Don't protest the poor bureaucrats of the IRS. Don't block the entrance to their doors. It doesn't make sense. And they did so in the most inane and silly way imaginable. They dressed up in pink and satin beds. And yes, they have the right to do whatever they want as American citizens. I am not saying they don't have the right to do this. I'm just saying it's stupid. 180 million Americans opposed the war in Iraq. And they couldn't get 18 million, 1.8 million, 180,000. They couldn't get 10,000. They couldn't get 1,000. They couldn't get 200. And yet some people consider them our leaders? They're not my leaders. What I think we need is a broad-based movement to oppose the war in Iraq that gets rid of all these subsidiary issues. Don't go after the war in Afghanistan, which I support. Don't go after Israel. Don't go after whatever agenda you have, whether it be, frankly, other things I support. Pro-choice agenda, it could be gay rights. I support that too, but it's not part of the agenda in opposing the war in Iraq. I think we should have a peace movement that is single-minded, to draw on as much allies as possible. And it wouldn't surprise me if the FBI and the CIA aren't planting some of these people that have been helping Cindy Sheehan, that have been helping Code Pink, in order to make their movements marginal and silly, so there is no mass movement opposing the war in Iraq. When Vietnam was there, we had tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Americans, indeed millions, march. But we're not marching now. There are lots of reasons for it. Some is apathy. But at the end of the day, I think part of it is our leadership. And that's why tomorrow I'm going to be taking on Cindy Sheehan. And you will hear our exchange. I don't want you to miss it. Let people know about it. Look, I respect the fact that she supports what she does. And I don't deny her grief for her son in Iraq. But I think she has to answer for some of her strange allies. So you'll hear that tomorrow on the Inside Scoop. Right now, coming up, of course, is Bob Kincaid. This is Mark Levine, signing off.
Cussin' and a discussin' with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! All the buttons work tonight, so, you know, we're off to a better start than we were last night. Last night was just a little bit weird. Now, a quick program note before we get going really hard at it. Tonight is Agnes's birthday, so I'm going to do a shortened show and then finish out, you know, the last hour of the program with last night's last hour. And then Peter Godbold was up wrestling with a server before the chickens, and he's exhausted. So that affords him an opportunity to rest up as well. Haven't heard from John yet as to how he feels about his show this evening, but I'll be back to produce it if he wants to. And maybe even back in time for the horn section, I don't know. But at any rate, we've got a couple of hours ahead of us to cuss and discuss, as we say, and you're welcome to chime in on most any issue that is on your mind. This is, after all, conversation radio, and it is not driven by the agenda of the host. Now, I've got some stuff out there, and we're going to get started on them pretty quick. I guess most people know that this is Earth Day, and it is an Earth, as every Earth Day has been since George Bush invaded the office of the president, an Earth Day of more one of grieving than of celebration. However, it is also, and you may not know this, maybe you do, I don't know, it is also Equal Pay Day. Yes, Equal Pay Day. It is a day for noting the pay inequities that exist in this country between women in the workforce and men in the workforce. DNC Chairman Howard Dean today said, "Democrats are committed to the fundamental idea that all people deserve equal pay for equal work, no matter their gender, skin color, background, or beliefs. But for too many women, wage disparity is still a stark reality. This inequity can have a drastic effect on a woman's life as she works to support herself and her family, and it puts her at greater risk of living in poverty, both while working and in retirement." All too true. Of course, it goes almost without saying that the Bush administration has done absolutely nothing to bridge the pay gap. And never mind the Bush administration. You know, in a way, George Bush is a cipher now. George Bush is a little something less than nothing now. George Bush is on his way out. But what about the McCain-Churian McCain-did-it? What about Grandpa Munster McCain? Well, we have his past to prove his future. Now, bear in mind that for every dollar a man earns in the workforce, on average, a woman earns about 77 cents. If you're female and a member of a minority, the disparity becomes even broader. Over the course of a lifetime, a woman could earn approximately $700,000 to $2 million less than a man as a result of the current wage gap. She's also less likely to receive any kind of retirement. She's also less likely to receive a pension. If you want to find out a little bit more, you can go to pay-equity.org and learn more. Now, what about John McCain? As we note all these facts, and they're not new facts, they're facts that have been going on. It certainly didn't happen with the rise of George W. Bush. It is a problem that this nation has been facing for decades. Well, in essence, has been facing since the great influx of women into the workforce during the Second World War. However, in vote number 258, on the 19th day of October, 2005, John McCain voted in the United States Senate to deny equal pay for American women. This was a part of some supposed overhauls to the minimum wage laws. Those minimum wage laws would have actually removed existing protections for many workers. Then again, in the United States Senate, vote number 180 on the 21st day of June 2006, he did it again. So it wasn't a whoopsie. John McCain, who calls his wife the C word, doesn't think that women deserve the same pay as men do for doing the same work. Kind of, that's one of the things that makes it so difficult for me to comprehend that we could wind up with this man in the White House. But I persist in warning you that we could. We so easily could, because we are so easily torn apart. Last night, our friend, our pal David down in South Carolina provided me with the news story about Hillary Clinton's new campaign ad that she began running in the waning days of the Pennsylvania campaign, in which she used an image of Osama bin Laden. And I brought it to the attention of John Fox and Peter Godbold last night. It was the commercial was a 30-second spot, and it showed images of Pearl Harbor, the Cuban Missile Crisis, and then it showed, yes, Osama bin Laden, the great bugaboo of the terrified American populace, with a voiceover that said, "It's the toughest job in the world. You need to be ready for anything, especially now with two wars, oil prices skyrocketing, and an economy in crisis. Harry Truman said it best, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen." Who do you think has what it takes? And then it showed Barack Obama skipping down the street in a little pink tutu. No, it didn't. But that was what the audience was supposed to think. That because he pointed out the absolute garbage of the pageant, wasn't a debate, it was a pageant, they're all pageants, because the rules that are involved have nothing to do with debate, because he pointed out the stupidity of flag pin questions and Jeremiah Wright questions, that somehow he's not tough enough to be president. The only tough one in this race is Hillary Clinton. Shame on her. Shame, 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 shame on her. Not for making that assertion. That's, you know, that's the political, yeah. That's the kind of sleazy negativity that we've come to expect from political opponents during their campaigns. But for the Osama bin Laden graphic reference, shame on her. We have been hammered with Osama bin Laden year after year after year. Not that Osama bin Laden's done anything. He stopped doing stuff to America when George Bush did what he was told by Osama bin Laden and got American troops out of Saudi Arabia. But here it is again. It's like 2004. Sometimes it feels like Groundhog Day around here. You know what I mean? Rise and shine, campers. It's cold out there, and Osama bin Laden's gonna get you. And look, I repeatedly denounced it when George Bush and Saxby Chambliss and Karl Rove and Dick Cheney and Condi Rice and Donald Rumsfeld and all were screaming Osama bin Laden every time George Bush's shoelace broke. And I am damn sure not going to compromise my ethics or my values to give Hillary Clinton a pass on this. But lo and behold, I got up this morning, and there it was. An excuse for Hillary Clinton. Yep, that's right. She got a pass. Somebody out there... what's the title of the blog post? Scared of an image of Bin Laden? God, it's like something out of... Nobody wants a Charlie in the box. It's like, God, it's like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Just pathetic. Are the pro-Obama forces seriously trying to get their troops outraged at this latest ad featuring an image of Osama bin Laden as a part of a series of presidential crises, depression, Pearl Harbor, gas crisis, Katrina, etc., and flashes of a half-second clip of Osama bin Laden as part of it? Spare me. No, don't think so. Not in a sparing mood. It was sleazy then. It's sleazy now. Because it is terror-mongering. One blogger writes, "The reaction is overwrought and I think politically obtuse. It makes it seem like Obama really is afraid to discuss the war on terror. And we know he not only is not, but it is one of his strongest arguments that we need to fight the war on terror, not the debacle in Iraq. Strange reaction from the Obama camp and his supporters." Once again, it's kind of like the elitism comment. Terror-mongering is wrong. Fear-mongering is wrong. And that's what this is. Are Democratic political ads no longer even allowed to mention the fact that the next president is going to have to deal with the war on terror? I don't know. I don't know what the next president's going to do. I don't know which abstract noun the next president's going to make war on. Wars on poverty, wars on drugs, wars on terror. Oy. What a bunch of crap. But yeah, at the end of the day, we know to expect Osama bin Laden imagery from the Republican Party. And it's a damned shame when we see it coming from our own. A damned shame. So, you know, no passes here. And listen, let's be clear about this. If it had been Osama bin Laden in Barack Obama ad, I would be saying the same thing. You know, tell you what, Senator Clinton, why don't you show us an ad that gives us an idea of how a really tough president would deal with the foreclosure crisis? Why don't you give us an ad that shows us how a really tough president would deal with Katrina? Really deal with Katrina, not give lip service to it and use that horrifying disaster as an excuse to enrich one's buddies in political circles, such has been the case with George W. Bush. Why don't you give us one of those ads? Don't wave the bloody shirt. This kind of advertising just exists on a continuum that goes back to its starting place with the Barry Goldwater ad with the little girl and the nuclear bomb. In your heart, you know he's right, but in your guts, you know he's nuts. But there it was, excuse-making for it. And see, that's the problem. The rancor that is manifested by the die-hard followers of these candidates is pure poison. The well gets Obama camp poisons the well for the Hilarians. The Hilarians poison the well for the Obamaniacs. And both wind up writing stupid crap on blogs like, Yeah, I will stand outside a polling place with a McCain sign on Election Day in November if Obama wins. Or blog posts, for instance, that reference... I read this quote today. Honest to God, I did. I will do anything to stop Obama. That was from a Hilarion. And you'll forgive me if that kind of language really does give me the chills. Because all you got to do is read. Just read. And you can find the stories of the people from the right wing who declared in the early 1960s that John Kennedy had to be stopped. Or the Klansmen with their robes and their burning crosses in the night who talked about stopping Martin Luther King. And those who were concerned about stopping Bobby Kennedy. Dangerous business, this matter of so-and-so must be stopped. And again, if there are Obamanians out there who are talking about the need to stop Hillary Clinton, I hope you will take a breath and reflect upon your words and the context in which you utter them. I don't even want to stop John McCain. I want to defeat John McCain. I want to ruin John McCain. I want to make sure that John McCain can never again be a threat to the American body politic, so that after this election he can go off and get a contract to do Viagra ads with Bob Dole on a beach somewhere. The prospect of John McCain is horrifying to me. I can't look at my grandchildren without shuddering at the thought of what John McCain will do to their future. Real, live, honest to God, full on, full body shudder. It's going to be hard enough as it is, fixing the mess that George W. Bush has put together for 8 years. Hey! For those of you playing the home game, oil hit a new record today, $117.19 a barrel. What do you think? I got a dollar says it can hit 118 by tomorrow. How about you? What do you think? 125 by May? 150 by August? What do you think it'll be at Christmas time? Just when the home heating season begins. 200? Will a new Democratic president take the reins of the ship of the helm? I'm sorry, mixing metaphors there. Take the helm of the ship of state? With America in the grips of an energy crisis brought on by $200 a barrel oil? I got another dollar says the answer is yes. What about you? I bet you wouldn't take the bet because you know you'd lose your dollar. Because with George Bush and his Republican cronies are standing on the railroad tracks whistling while the light comes at them out of the darkness head on. And with him leaving office, there's no reason not to just drive everything else into the dirt and make sure that the mess... the Republicans had that hissy about the made-up story about the Clinton people taking all the W's off the keyboards. Jesus, the Bush people will take the keyboards, they'll take the workstations, they'll take the mainframe, they'll take everything. It'll look like the inside of that Whoville house after the Grinch was done with it. So before we have any more hissies, before we have any more fits about magazine covers or, you know, bloody shirt ads, because I'm not having a fit. I just think it stinks. Let's reflect a little bit. Let's reflect on what the real problem is. I'm going to drive that bus like a crazy man from now till November. The problem is John Sidney McCain. The problem is John Sidney McCain. Take just a couple of minutes and think about John Sidney McCain wielding Unitarian executive power. Think about John Sidney McCain with the power to order the arrest and indefinite detention of anyone he sets his sights on. Just think about it for a couple of minutes and see how well it sits down in your belly with your dinner. Because I got a feeling it's not going to sit any too well. Oh, and there's a ton of other stuff out there. Stuff that is sort of a pointing a way forward to what we can expect if we don't get our act together and decide real quick to beat John Sidney McCain, defeat him thoroughly, roundly, and soundly, and make sure that he cannot be a political threat to your future, your children's future, your grandchildren's future, and your great-grandchildren's future. Oh, it's pollen season. Sorry for the pause there, but you don't need to hear me sneezing at you. No, you want to look at the future? How about this? There's been a little experimentation going on in the Deep South, places like Tennessee and Mississippi and Arkansas. That experiment is with something that you and I might call martial law. Series of raids on businesses and homes, boats, traffic, roadblocks, even personal searches. What for? Well, the authorities say that they're looking for terrorists. You know, the ones that are commanded by that guy that was in the Hillary Clinton ad. You know, Osama bin Laden. Oh, wow. Nasty sneezing. Maybe I should just play music and go ahead and have the fit. No, they're looking for terrorists. Of course, they haven't found any. Or if they found any, there's been no announcements. In the meantime, however, 332 people have been arrested in these sweeps. A 142 of them were described by the authorities as fugitives. They also wrote 1,300 traffic tickets and seized hundreds of dollars. In Nashville, Channel 5 there has reported that agents have seized equipment from local businesses. No, really. Sorry, you're going to have to put up with these sneezing breaks, because if I take any kind of an antihistamine, I'll fall out and just pass out and slump against the microphone. And extremely drug sensitive. I apologize. No, local businesses, the FBI, along with hundreds of officers, say that they're looking for anything out of the ordinary. They're busting in doors and taking computers and paperwork. A store owner in Nashville says he was told that the agents were looking for stolen electronics. Other business owners say they're being targeted, but law enforcement just says, we're just trying to track down possible terrorists before something big happens, you know, something big.
It's going to be big, Andy. It's going to be big.
Apart from the Nashville story, there's been very little reporting on any of this. This is amazing stuff. No justifications given, random stops and roadblocks, money seized, equipment seized. And this is just a sort of, you know, tippy toe into the water's edge. It's going to get a lot more interesting if, come January 2009, the word president and the word McCain have to be said one after the other. So, you know, be aware. Be aware. Let's go to the phones. Hi,
hey,
welcome
Bob.
To the... Hey, Juanita.
Hey, I just has got some bad news about someone close to me that said that if Hillary was a candidate, they wouldn't vote. They'd vote for McCain.
Yeah.
And I said, I hope you're kidding. And I mean, so I'm going to have to come up with some things.
Well, right off the bat, hit them with the Supreme Court.
Well, that, and then I thought it too, you know, as bad as the Democrats have behaved, if they had to come in to a majority in the House and Senate, things would have been a whole lot worse. Look at all the stuff that Bush would have gotten his way on.
Well, just this week, the Senate has confirmed another right-wing goon to the federal bench, Juanita. And it looks like there's more coming. So it's not like we can count on the United States Senate to stop any of this.
I agree.
So we've got to have a president in there who will at least nominate judges who are reasonably sane.
Right. I got to be on my toes.
But
that is the biggest.
I hope these people like you talk to, Juanita, are just sort of venting their frustrations or being a little bit spoiled or whatever. Because
well, a lot of this stuff that coming out, you know, makes some younger people think it's a joke. You know, they're treating it like a joke, and it's dead serious. I'm not talking about the young people treating it like it's a joke. I'm talking about the politicians.
Oh, right. No, I understand what you... Yes. Yes.
And there's... It's disgusting to many people, including me.
Well, how do you feel about Democrats using Osama bin Laden's image in their political ads, Juanita?
I just think it's disgusting. I don't know who's advising her. Whoever's advising her, I think, is just trying to destroy her.
You know, something...
They're doing a good job. She really...
Oh, but she'll win Pennsylvania tonight, and tomorrow's news covering. Oh, she's off the ropes. Oh, she's the comeback. Look, this Kabuki theater goes all the way to Denver. This train goes all the way to Denver.
Yeah. I don't know. But that's what I was going to say. Kind of struck me. Knocked me for a loop. I hope you're kidding. No.
And they said, no, I'm deadly. They, no, I'm serious, or no, I mean it, or something like that. I mean,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But anyway.
The first thing you can do, Juanita, is just politely say, why?
Yeah, well, I'll have a chance.
I mean, let them try to convince you.
No, they're not going to convince me.
No, but let them try. Let them try.
Oh, okay. Maybe I should.
If that comes up in conversation, there's no law or no rule that says you have to just go, well, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, if this person's a real Democrat, to say something like that is just, it's obscene, Juanita. It's obscene.
It's what?
Obscene.
Yeah.
It's pornographic.
Yeah, I still blame the media and the politicians, especially the Democrats.
How so?
Well, what, the media?
No. How do you blame Democrats?
Well, for acting like sniveling cowards, for one thing.
Oh, you mean Democratic voters?
No, I'm talking about the...
Oh, you mean the crowd in Congress that won't stop the war?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I'm not talking about the voters. Well, I think the voters could go either way. It's according to one thing, what happens. But you know, one thing I kind of thought today, this is odd now.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows? You think he might be going to fake his death and then they'll have a powerful funeral? He'll go to South America and
who, George?
And we'll have a powerful funeral, and they'll say, "Oh, he was really, really was a good guy."
Oh, Lord, I don't even think he wants to go live with Elvis and Ken Lay.
Well, that's my imagination. I'm going to jump to something else. Did you read anything about that guy?
Yeah, I did. I saw the email you sent, and I gave it a browse.
Very interesting, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does.
I'd love for them to have a debate. You there?
I'm here. I'm very leery of the word debate anymore because they're never debates.
I mean a real debate. I don't know what they have down here, but anyway.
Yeah, I know. But
okay, Bob, I'm going to let you go, but you know what? You are incredible.
Well, bless your heart, Juanita. We'll talk to you later.
Okay,
bye now. And we'll just roll it along. You know the phone number, by the way, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. If you've got your own long-distance dialing program where they don't gouge you for your long distance, it's 304-658-3333. Let's keep it rolling.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan.
To people, when you finally reach the frustration point with the people, the so-called Democrats who are saying, if Hillary gets it, I'm voting for McCain, or if Obama gets it, I'm voting for McCain. I have two words. Grow up.
Yeah, grow up's a nice start.
This is not...
Of course, I can think of a couple of other words that, you know, one begins with F, the other begins with O, you know, the second one's off, the first one rhymes with pluck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to keep it clean and genteel here.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, this is... I appreciate it. But honestly, I've got to keep telling myself that these are just people who are a little over-impassioned, and they'll get better, and they'll grow up, and we'll come together, and we'll beat this sorry son of a sea cook.
You and me both. Now, if you have any doubts at all, go read that article. I think it was a Washington Post about McCain and his temper. Now, consider a man with a unitary executive power, a man with the ability to detain you and send you off to Gitmo just because it's Thursday. This is a guy who likes to destroy the careers of secretaries because they cross him.
Yep, nice guy that. No, again.
You know, I can just imagine.
I don't know what this is. I don't. Susan, is it because people, you know, by virtue of having been wrapped up in their particular hero candidate's race that they haven't even bothered to take a look at McCain? Is that what it is?
I don't know. I'm constantly going on to, and I'm going to continue to keep at it. I'm going to be telling people right in the middle of Obama headquarters down here when they open the office, because I'm going to be working there. I'm going to be telling them, guys, if our guy doesn't get it, I'm voting for Hillary. And you had better line up right behind me.
McCain is so... He's so pointedly nuts. I mean, it's... You can't see the thing with McCain is you can't even make the argument that the repigs made about Bush. Oh, he's a good old boy. I just want to sit down and have a drink a beer with him. Nobody in their right mind would drink a beer with John McCain because McCain's one of those crazy fighting drunks.
Yeah, and this guy's had something wrong with him for almost from the minute he was born. Any 2-year-old who holds his breath to the point gets so mad he passes out. There's something wrong in the wiring there.
Probably whacked his little noggin when he passed out, too, so there could be that.
You know, the guy just freaks me out completely.
I mean, I saw this other story today where there was a great big, you know, oh my God, purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy with crocheted tails over the sexism of the New Republic's magazine cover. Now, I realize this is describing a visual on radio, but it's basically a magazine cover that shows Hillary Clinton. It's a photo of Hillary Clinton in a pantsuit with her arm raised up like she's, you know, calling on God or something, and with her mouth wide open, and there are little balloons around it with, you know, stuff from the campaign. And I saw this hissy and played on a blog thread today with a bunch of people who were, it's sexism, I tell you, sexism.
How?
Because no one would dare do that to a man on the cover of the New Republic or any other magazine. They'd never do that. They're doing it to her because she's a woman. They're doing it to her because she's a Clinton. This stuff's been going on since 1991.
Yeah. I mean, geez, grow up, Hillary. Come on. Give me a break here. It has nothing to do with your gender, and it has everything to do with your last name.
But I understand some of this, Susan. I spend a lot of time thinking about this kind of stuff, because it's kind of my job. Let's see if we can work through this. It's about Senator Clinton. Yes, it is. But there are a lot of people who have invested in her because, frankly, there's nobody else on the political horizon who has what they see as even a remote prayer of getting close to the presidency. If it isn't Hillary, right now, we will never have a woman president. That's the way the thinking goes.
Well,
maybe it's true. Maybe there's nobody else out there that has the star power. But you know what? Barack Obama came out and didn't have any star power until the 2004 Democratic Convention and started a bunch of buzz. Why couldn't a woman do something like that?
The upcoming first female president of the United States is not one of these teenagers who suddenly got enthused by this election cycle and is getting involved in politics right now for the first time.
That may very well be. We can't say with any kind of certainty who is doing what anywhere in the nation right now.
Yeah.
I think back to somebody that I had profound admiration and respect and a little bit of love for, and that was Ann Richards.
Oh God, yes, I love.
I was in the building in Atlanta, Georgia, in 1988 when she delivered the Silver Spoon speech.
Oh yeah.
And if that woman had run, if I'd been anywhere in any jurisdiction where I could have voted for her for anything, I'd have done it twice.
You and me both. Hallelujah. Amen. Her
sadly, sadly, she's gone. But you know what? We need... We need a candidate like her, and I say that with regard to Obama or Clinton.
Right. There was another woman from Texas that would have been just as good. Her name was Barbara Jordan.
I remember when Barbara Jordan ran. I was just a kid, but I remember. Yeah.
Now, who's to say? Few years down the road, I refuse to give up the idea of a woman president. There will be one.
I don't think there's any reason to give up the idea, Susan.
Oh,
but what I'm talking about is the perception of the oh my God crowd. That if not Hillary, nobody.
No, it's not going to happen. It will happen. It will happen. There's a saying that I picked up someplace. You can't railroad until it's time to railroad. And they were talking about engineering principles. You have to get all of your ducks in a row.
That all the science has to be behind it before you can... Right.
Okay, same thing has to happen with political science as well. It will come.
It will.
It will come.
But there...
I may not live to see it. I don't care if I live to see it. But it will come.
And it will be just as much as having a president of African-American extraction.
Exactly.
It will be a historic moment, not just for the United States, but for the world.
Yeah.
On the other hand, John McCain...
Oh, my God.
Just another nightmare for the nation and the world.
He's frankly not qualified. His temper disqualifies him. As far as I'm concerned, he is emotionally unfit for that office.
And again, I'm not going to be among the political babes in the wood, the political wet behind the ears crowd, and scream that I won't vote for Hillary if she's the nominee. By God, I will.
I'll vote for her like crazy.
I'll vote for her, or I will vote for Obama. I will not vote for McCain, and I will not stay home.
Exactly. I'm gonna be dragging people into the polls and by the hair if need be. That's a metaphor, Agent Fred. Please understand that. But yeah. People around here are really sick of Susan Civics Lesson 101.
don't stop until they run away from you at the very sight of you.
I don't intend to, but if that's what I have to do to get people to get in there and vote, I'm not kidding.
Well, it's like from last night. Every time I go through the line at the grocery store and I see the young woman who's going to vote for McCain, and never mind, I mean, you know, we went through all that. She had no intention of voting for the Democratic nominee because she hates Hillary and Obama.
Yeah.
I'm going to, you know, I'm going to get a little jab in, a little needle.
Yeah, tell her to look up the USS Forrestal. There's pretty good evidence he caused the death of over close to 150 sailors and got off scot-free. Daddy was an admiral.
That's nice when your dad's an admiral or a director of the CIA. It's just more of the same. It's George Bush with the third film in the trilogy.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, right.
You and I both know that if McCain or George Bush or any of these guys had been born into, say, a family like the one you were born in, like the one I was born into, they would be down on Skid Row right now. Because they're basically bums.
And that's the thing I can't seem to get across, and it drives me nuts, Susan, that I can't. Running for president, you have three people. Old white guy, young African-American guy, middle-aged white woman.
Uh-huh.
I tend not to see them that way. I just look and I see...
I see two smart people and one idiot.
I see three multimillionaires. Who wouldn't begin to understand for 15 seconds the life that you, me, and most of the Horn listeners live.
That's true.
Who would absolutely be reduced to weeping within a week of having to deal with the stuff that we deal with.
That's true. But at the very least, I want my president to have a functioning brain. And let's face it, John McCain does.
And that's that's the difference. The difference is politics. The difference is not gender or race. The difference is politics.
Well, not just politics, but intelligence. I honestly don't think he's got the...
Well, I guess I'm cheating a little bit because I assume that there is something mentally wrong with people who vote against their own interests, who, as the saying goes, vote against their own wallets.
Yeah.
And therefore, there's it's sort of one bespeaks the other.
Yeah, but if you look at the three of them, though, you know, and just look at what you know at their life. Both Hillary and Barack are both scary smart. They're extremely intelligent.
Right. You don't get in. You don't.
He has to be told when to come out of the rain.
McCain has to be told that it is rain.
Yeah.
Susan, I'm going to roll along, dear.
Okay, you love to Agnes.
All right.
Happy birthday, honey.
All right. Yeah, I'm going to take her out to dinner in a little bit.
Oh, good.
That's why the show's only going to be 2 hours.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. It's the least I can do. So... Are we all okay with this? If I'm getting it wrong, tell me. Because I really do. I spend a lot of time with this stuff rolling around in my head. And no, I don't for an instant think that at this point in their lives, the three millionaires have anything in common with me. Whether it's bowling or drinking a shot of whiskey or whatever stupid stunt John McCain has lately done. They don't know my life, they don't know your life, and the reason they are where they are is because they desperately don't want to know it. So please don't delude yourself into thinking that you have something particularly in common with any of these candidates. You don't. You are a member of the plebs. I am a member of the plebs. We are not a member of the equestrian class or the knightly class or the senatorial class, to continue with the Roman metaphor. We're plebs. We're the people who make it go. We're the people who make the millionaires' lives possible. And yeah, Wednesdays and Saturdays or whatever, we toddle down to the convenience mart and we buy our lottery ticket so we can have a 1 in 150 million chance of being miraculously elevated above our own. But even if we win, we're still plebs. What did winning the lottery do for Jack Whitaker? There's the guy who on a Christmas a couple or 3 years ago shows up on television in his black cowboy hat without his teethuses in, having just won $370 million. A couple of years later, his wife's left him, and his granddaughter's dead. And the kneecappers are after him from Atlantic City. Funny, all that money didn't entitle him to a special place in the hearts of the moneyed class. You see what I'm getting at? We are the plebs. We are working class. We will always be working class. And you know what? I'm kind of proud of it. It used to be that the middle class and the lower class comprised the working class, but the working class is shrinking. There may be no, in a very short period of time, there may be no sense in talking about a middle class. It'll all be working class. And it'll all be lower class. Because, like I said, it is the goal and ambition of the Republican Party to destroy the middle class. So just sort of bear that in mind the next time that you're tempted to engage, and most of you probably aren't, but if you should be tempted to engage in any hero worship, stop yourself. This is a purely transactional political decision that you're making, or have made as far as the primaries are concerned. And once again, I'm still in search of that answer, and nobody has given it to me yet, and I haven't come to it yet. I still want to know why it is that the rancor and the poison is getting stronger and the number of voters are getting smaller. After today, considerably smaller, with Pennsylvania out of the way. Somebody's got something up their sleeve. I would sleep a little better at night if I knew what that something was. But I don't. I just don't. So maybe we'll sort it out. I don't know. Second and final hour of tonight's program coming up in a matter of minutes. Get your thoughts in early, or you won't get them in this evening. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on.
Went to see the captain, strangest I could find. Laid my proposition down, laid it on the line. I won't slave for beggar's pay, likewise gold and jewels, but I would slave to learn the way, sink your ship of fools, ship of thank you. as empty as they were filled before. Time there was and plenty, but from that cup no more. Oh, I could not caution all, I still might want a few. Don't lend your hand to raise your flank atop no ship of fools. Shipper on a cool sea. Shipper.
Second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All righty. Haven't played any Grateful Dead in a long, long time, so pardon me. Every now and then I have to do that. And that seemed appropriate. By the way, I haven't mentioned it in a while. You know, there are message boards opened up. Forum. It's a forum, and that's what we call it, a forum. They're not message boards. It's a forum at headonradionetwork.com. We invite you to use them. Cuss and discuss in a more long-term way than what you get in the chat room at headonradionetwork.com. We're putting as much multimedia stuff out there, blog posts, that kind of stuff, as we possibly can. All to increase the dialogue, all to enhance the great American discussion, and all for those who care to use it. Free. No fees. Supporting the horn is a matter entirely of choice, and there are no subscriptions. If you want to listen and you can't support us, tell people about us. Tell people what you listen to of an evening, of an afternoon, and you'll be helping too. So, you know, go on by, check it out, the forum and the chat room. If you've never been to the chat room, it's a rousing, wonderful place. I think the horn hosts are just about the only ones in the talk business who also watch the chat room at the same time that they're doing a show. Which I think makes us, once again, a little bit even more unique. Now let's move over to a story that, you know, a week, 2 weeks ago, that ABC broke the news that the principals that included Cheney and Rumsfeld and Condoleezza Rice and George Tenet, you know, the whole creepy crowd, that they had sat in meetings since 2002 making plans to engage the government of the United States in criminal conduct, namely torture. Well, it turns out that there's a book on the way out by an international law professor named Philip Sands. And he lays out in his new book how those torture techniques, things like stress positions, in other words, being hung by your hands. You know, we don't say hanging people by their hands. We say stress positions or hanging people upside down from their cell bars. We don't call that what that is. We stress positions. How that all happened and where it came from. Surprisingly, not. It came straight from the sick, twisted minds of people like Alberto Torture Boy Gonzalez and a guy who's turning out to probably be the biggest war criminal wandering free on the planet, David Addington, as well as the lawyer to Donald Rumsfeld, a guy by the name of Jim Haynes. They all went down to Guantanamo Bay back in 2002, and they witnessed an interrogation. And they went back to Washington and said, let's do it some more. Mr. Sands says the driving individual was David Addington, and that he was the man in control. This is a quote from Mr. Sands. He says, there was an extraordinary meeting held in September 2002, just before the techniques were to go up the chain of command. Gonzalez, Addington, and Haynes descended on Guantanamo, met with the combatant commanders there, Mike Dunleavy, watched some interrogations, and as I was told by Dunleavy and by his lawyer, Diane Beaver, basically sent out the signal, do whatever needs to be done. This is where it starts getting creepy. Please, the whole thing's creepy. But Sands also documents that General Richard Myers, who was at that point in time the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, was completely eliminated from the information chain by Donald Rumsfeld. Myers had no idea that the Bush administration had thrown the Geneva Conventions out the window and that they were clearly engaging in activities that went against the Army Field Manual. Keep using this word, astonishing, astonishing. According to Philip Sands, the records of interrogation of so-called Al-Qaeda suspect Mohammed al-Qahtani, who is the guy that Gonzalez, Addington, and Haynes went down to see tortured, just disappeared. The records disappeared. In court papers, the U.S. military has admitted that cameras that were designed to run 24 hours a day at the prison were set to automatically record over their contents. How do you like that? How do you like that? Does it make you feel patriotic? Does it make you feel good? I hope not. It makes me feel dirty. It makes me feel sick. It makes me feel especially disgusted with congressional weenies like the guy, what was his name? Sleaza? No, come on. Real name here, gotta find it. CSTAC. This guy that was interviewed by Mark Levine on his program immediately preceding this one. Makes me feel particularly ashamed of him, because they get this information. They don't live in a bubble. They're not like the President of the United States. They know that torture is taking place, and they won't do anything about it, despite having sworn an oath to protect and defend and uphold the Constitution of the United States. They don't even have the stones to compel the testimony of people like Josh Bolton and Harriet Myers. Sweet, suffering God. And now, finally, the information's beginning to trickle out at low this late hour. And what do we have? Well, we find out that this was planned all along at the highest level. And George Bush even comes out and says publicly, I knew all about it. What are you going to do about it? Huh? What are you going to do? Going to be tough? You're Democrats. What are you talking about? And we're all wrapped up, of course, in the stuff we're wrapped up in. Could it be, however, that there's a change coming? You know, when I was talking with Carolyn Kay this past Friday evening, I asked her what would have to happen from a statistical standpoint to make the mainstream media, the so-called professional media, sit up and take notice. Maybe this is the answer to that question. After the pageant last week in Pennsylvania, and after the Washington Post TV critic, whose name is Tom Shales, said that the clear loser is ABC, ABC's evening newscast ratings went in the tank. NBC took down ABC by over 600,000 viewers last week. And that's pretty huge for the network newscasts. One reason, according to Rachel Sklar, for that gap is that on Friday, NBC beat ABC by 1.1 million viewers, and that is virtually unheard of on any sort of random Friday night. Maybe, just maybe, the American people are finally wising up. Dare we hope? Can we let that tiny little last molecule of hope see some daylight and breathe some air inside our hearts? You'd like to, and so would I. Maybe this is that answer. Maybe finally the American people, with their clickers, are beginning to let the networks know. Let the million-dollar babies know that we're sick to death of questions about lapel pins and preachers and whiskey shots and pearls. It would be inspiring if that were the case. Let's see who's on the phone. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Bob? It's Andrew.
Hey, what's going on, Andrew?
Not much. Just listening to your program, and I'm seeing all the whole Obama and Hillary, you know, the whole, it's just a spectacle. But there is no way in hell that I would vote for John McCain.
How can anybody in their right mind? That's the thing that keeps throwing me, Andrew.
Yeah, I mean, as much as, you know, I would prefer to see Obama, even though he has his faults and from a lot of things I disagree with him on, there's no way I could vote for McCain. That's just insanity. I mean, if people are banking on, I don't know what they're thinking. I mean, You got to vote for a Democrat regardless. That's just the way I look at it.
If there's going to be any hope at all, yeah. Because voting for McCain just says, hey, you know, we're done, play it out, you know.
Basically.
This is the guy who doesn't even work into your 5-day pitching rotation. You only put him in the rotation when the, you know, when you've got two or three people with broken arms. This is bringing in the center fielder to pitch. This is an admission that you've lost.
Yeah, and the way I look at this whole election is that this election is it can be either a beginning or it can be like hitting a reset button on America. Okay?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, God forbid, but if McCain gets it, you consider hitting a reset button because there will be a revolution because he, like you said, he has a temper. He will try to institutionalize all this phony Unitarian executive crap that's going on that Bush has established. Anti-democratic presidency. He will use every aspect of it. And Hillary, if Hillary gets the nomination, by hook or crook, I'm going to vote for her. You know, but, and then if Hillary comes in there and just says she wins the presidency, if she wins the presidency, and it doesn't change or whatever, then we're going to have to hit the reset button in. Same thing with Obama. But I think, for me personally, that Obama would be the better choice in going forward. Maybe we can, you know, get out of this morass that we find ourselves in. But I cannot vote for McCain. I can't emphasize how much that I would not vote for him. That's just an honest issue for me.
Drop a sledgehammer on your own foot first. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, I don't care for some of the tactics that Hillary's using, but she still has a Democrat D after her name, and she's, you know, you'll be miles better than McCain, I would think.
And look, when she...
wrong, but...
Now, she's playing hardball. It is.
Oh, yeah.
I heard that snarky comment from Bill Clinton the other day about, politics is a contact sport, and if you can't take it, you better not put on the uniform.
Yeah, well...
What the hell does that mean? Yeah, I know, it's nasty. It's a sad thing that it is nasty in the United States. Maybe that's the best argument we have, Andrew, for shortening the process dramatically.
Yes.
To cut down on, because you know what, the TV companies and the media companies and the media buying companies are all getting stinking rich off of all of this.
Yes, they are, with all the ads and you know they're just filling their coffers and just loving it. I mean, they're lapping it up.
And the people who are suffering are the electorate, because you got people who are getting themselves absolutely hopping, screaming, beat of water on a hot iron skillet, mad.
Yeah. And the longer it goes on, it just works in the McCain's favor. I mean, it's like, okay, let's get this over and done with. I mean, how long have they been campaigning? It seems like 2 years.
It just about is.
Huh?
Yeah.
It seems like 2 years. A good year and a half.
It was a year and a month ago that I was sitting in my father's home watching Hillary and Barack give separate speeches in Selma.
I mean...
There is nothing like this. And the primary season itself, you know, start in New Hampshire, go till hell freezes over or whatever, that's normal. But it's the run-up. The seemingly ceaseless he said, she said, sandbox.
Gotcha politics, gotcha this, oh, he said that, he said this, oh, well, this. It's just like, I'm tired of it, personally. I've been tired of it probably 6 months ago.
I got stories here in the stack, Andrew, that are hair-raising. Feds want to require visitors' fingerprints when leaving U.S. I've got Measure Backs American Values in state schools. I got story after story. I got a right-wing essay called The Real Jimmy Carter that's a real wade through the cesspool.
Oh, I bet that's a gem.
And that's all available, and it'll all eventually make it onto the show. But even, I'm the first one to admit when I've been had.
Yeah. I mean, we're wasting all our time wasting a lot of time on the primaries. And I'm not saying the primaries aren't important, but this is, like, ridiculous. And, you know, there was a story that came out about Christine Todd Whitman. Did you see it where the judge, I think Second Appeals Court, U.S. District Court or whatever, said that she's not liable for the statement she said that the air was breathable down at 9/11 at the Ground Zero site when they were cleaning it up, saying the air was safe? And they said that she's not liable for that? And then the lawyer for Christine Todd Whitman, the Department of Justice lawyer, said, oh, well, if we hold her liable, then politicians won't be able to speak on matters when it comes to, like, public safety.
Then politicians won't be able to lie to the American people anymore.
Exactly. Now you just set a precedent. I said, go ahead, lie. Don't matter. Yeah, it's safe.
Well, do you have any kind of an answer for me, Andrew? Why is this getting nastier? Is it because the margins are so close and because it's just getting eviler and eviler and eviler the fewer and fewer available voters there are?
Well, it's desperation. It's desperation on, I mean, Obama is leading in the so-called delegate count. I have to put it to desperation. I don't know. I
almost
don't know. Didn't they say Hillary has to win by like 10 percentage points or something in Pennsylvania?
I've seen so many of those things. I don't know.
Yeah, I heard 20 the other day. I heard 20. Now I'm hearing 10%. He has to have a margin of victory of like 10%. I heard 20 the other day. I don't know. She's not gonna stop campaigning. Until Puerto Rico.
She's not going to stop campaigning until Denver.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the things that I keep trying to get across in all of this. This doesn't end till Denver. And there are some who say that it won't end there.
No. It's just helping McCain. It's just helping insane McCain. I mean, I have to admit, I got caught up in some of the thing, you know, a little bit of Hillary, you know, this and that, you know, little Hillary with that, Hillary bash. But I don't like some of the things, like you said, Richard Millen, like I said before. He's hanging out with the people that dogged her out before. But when push comes to shove, and if she gets...
I'll vote for her.
I gotta vote for her. That's the bottom line. I can't vote for McCain.
I mean...
Vote for McCain and then vote Democrat the rest of the ticket.
I got one of those little acid reflux things going on when I saw the story yesterday about the Osama bin Laden ad that she decided to run in Pennsylvania. I'm just ashamed of that.
Yeah.
It makes me feel like me and other liberals and progressives have been played for chumps.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were out there talking about how disgusting it was when the Bush administration did it, but there's some sort of a double standard that applies for her. And I frankly haven't figured out what that double standard is. And you got people saying, well, what, Democrats can't even mention the war on terror? There's nothing that says Democrats can't mention the war on terror, but there is a sort of a thing. You don't have to show Osama bin Laden in a political ad to mention the war on terror.
Exactly. It's been in our face for the last, since 9/11.
The fact of the matter is...
It's almost coming on 7 years.
The fact of the matter is, that ad, for instance... was justified on the grounds of, well, these are showing presidential crises. Okay, one of the things they showed was the Cuban Missile Crisis. Another thing they showed was Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
But you know what? Osama bin Laden is not an American presidential crisis. Osama bin Laden is not going to be a crisis for the president coming into the Oval Office.
No.
The crisis is going to be the gasoline. The crisis is going to be the economy. The crisis is going to be housing. The crisis is going to be the credit crunch. All of these things.
Yeah. The price of food. Food shortages. You see the rice rationing. You see, like...
Yeah, food riots.
I'm like, hey, there are more pressing issues besides, like, Osama bin Laden. Look, that's a police action anyway. The whole global war on terrorism crap is nothing but that is a police action. You need to have investigations, go find them. It's not a war.
And finally, I think
investigated. And besides that, I was listening to Randy Rhodes, and she said when she ran those ads, when Hillary ran those ads, why didn't she run the ads where the first World Trade Center bombing, when Clinton caught the guys that did it and locked them up? If she wanted to make a point on, you know.
Because that's how you do it. That's how you do it. You catch the dirty SOB who did it, and you put him in a jail cell next to Ted Kaczynski.
Exactly. Exactly.
So
fear mongering by just showing some dusty old photos and dusty old clips of Osama bin Laden, that ain't helping matters. That's not helping her cause. So I don't know why she's doing that.
In the final analysis, Andrew, isn't it a matter? It's just insulting, because when a politician puts that garbage out on the airwaves, that means the politician thinks that the electorate in general are stupid enough and scared enough to swallow it.
Exactly, and if Obama did it, I would be saying the same thing about him.
We weren't operating the way we are now. I was still on terrestrial radio at the time, but shortly before the 2004 November general election, when Dick Cheney came out and said, "If you elect John Kerry, I guarantee you the terrorists will hit us again almost immediately."
Mm-hmm.
How many? Do you remember that, Andrew?
Yeah, I remember it.
Because it just made me sick.
Yeah, I remember that scumbag saying that, but it's...
And it was ridiculous, and it was stupid, and it was insulting. Again, it was insulting.
Yeah, totally insulting. Just like that home relief, whatever. What was that bill they passed? Is it in the Senate right now? Where they're giving all the tax breaks to the airline industry? home mortgage relief for... What? I'm like, I read that and I almost fell out of my chair. And I got so pissed off, I was like, oh, my God. My BP went up a few points. I was like, what the heck is this? Just another way to channel some more money to their cronies and whatnot. I'm like...
More corporate welfare.
That is what they need to be discussing. They don't need to be going back and forth, playing gotcha games with each other. They need to be saying, like, this is what I'm going to do. When I get in office, we've got to rectify the economy. How are you going to do it? Here's my plan.
Are we going to get any let up, Andrew? Because places like Kentucky and West Virginia and Indiana are not big old states like Pennsylvania where you can just spend all your time there. Or, you know, I'm really a little bit concerned because May the 13th is our primary and nobody else has their primary on that day. So that gives them a week. And I am scared to death that Hillary's going to be running around West Virginia drinking liquor and Obama's going to be stopping at every bowling alley he can find. It won't be safe to take your family out nor to go out and tie one on.
Oh, man, West Virginia will be on lockdown, man. You have more Secret Service and everything running around. I don't know, man. I don't know. But... I don't think there's going to be any let-up. Like you said, it's going to go to the convention. Maybe the Supreme Court's going to, you know, pick who those Democrats.
Well, I noticed I got a little alert from Brad Blog, our buddy Brad Friedman, and he says that as of this morning, the stories of voting irregularities were already flowing into him.
Yeah, I saw some stuff on Raw Story about that. Yeah. Yeah, two machines and... In one precinct, they had two machines and something, you know, one wasn't working, the other, and then the last one they had, it still wasn't working right. And the one machine
wouldn't let anybody vote for anybody but Ralph Nader, so, you know what.
Well, I'll tell you what, Bob, I'm going to let you go so you can get on to the next caller, and Agnes, I said happy birthday. Have a good dinner tonight.
I will convey, Agnes, your best wishes, and thank you very much.
Yes, and I hope you're feeling better. You know, I heard you having some gastro issues and stuff.
Yeah,
like that.
It's a lot of fun, and I've got to go and have another date with another machine that goes ping before we find out whether we're going to rip this nasty little thing out or throw pills at it or God knows what.
All right. Well, hey, have a good evening.
All right. Thanks, Andrew.
See you later.
All right. Take care.
Yep.
Bye now. From shouting distance of the home of FDR, that's our buddy Andrew in New York. Really, I'm terrified. I don't know what the week before May 13th is going to look like in West Virginia with Hillary and Barack just all over the place. It won't be safe. Probably, and, you know, if the networks have nothing left to do, but, you know, poll West Virginians, liable to go to the grocery store and get a microphone stuck in your face. What do you think about flag pins? So, with the... And, you know what, have the polls already closed in Pennsylvania? Do they close in an hour? Do they close in a half an hour? I don't know. It'll be like 2 minutes after the polls close and they'll declare victory for somebody, somehow, another way, one way or another. Like I said, there's a million real stories out there. A little story that means something to me because it deals with my region and people that I love, as well as Regent Tony Seaton over at Quality News Network still is putting out an email news brief every day. And he noted that a new study is reporting that life expectancy among women, mainly in the Deep South, Appalachia, and the lower Midwest, are experiencing lower life expectancies for the first time in, count 'em, 90 years. The study lists three reasons: hypertension, smoking, and obesity. Tony says these are the results of personal life choices, sad, fatal choices. I take a little bit of an issue with Tony on that, because of that word, choices. Hypertension, smoking, and obesity. Smoking is a choice. It's a choice that you make, and then a choice that becomes very difficult to retreat from. Because we're not talking about just deciding not to eat chocolate or giving up Cadbury bunnies for Lent. It's an addiction. Odds are that if those rates are going up, the demographics are mostly poor and lower middle class. We're talking about the Deep South, Appalachia, and the lower Midwest. Hypertension, smoking, and obesity. The hypertension has as at least a contributing factor the constant grinding, day in and day out stress of trying to hold a job or feed the kids, or hold a job and feed the kids and see if maybe they can get a halfway decent education. And, oh, by the way, tonight's Cub Scouts, or we promise to be at the PTA, dear. Wait a minute, what? You've got to work a double shift tomorrow? That's how hypertension happens. Hypertension doesn't come out of the Morton salt box. High blood pressure has a variety of causes. Obesity? You work two jobs, you eat crap food on the run, and when you get home, you want to plop your butt in a chair and relax, maybe watch a movie with the husband. Or maybe watch a movie by yourself, or watch a movie with your kids. But what you don't want to do, or what you can't do, or what you're not going to do because you ain't got one, because this is the lower Midwest, the Deep South, and Appalachia, is go out and get on the stair stepper at the club. Because there ain't no club. We're talking here about rural populations. The hypertension feeds the obesity feeds the hypertension, and the smoking is the last thing you feel like you got. Now, I'm not a woman in any of those regions. I'm not a woman. But I'm dealing with hypertension, smoking, and obesity, so I can talk with some degree of authority about the causes behind them. If I ever get to build the time machine, I'm going to go back behind the gym of the high school, and I'm going to find little ninth grade me, and I'm going to kick his ass all the way around to the front of the building, take his cigarettes away, and make him eat them. And say, don't do this. I'm you. I'm telling you this for a reason. probably take away some of the waffles and syrup and butter and a few of the sausage links along the way, too. And no, it is not necessary to eat the whole pint of Häagen-Dazs just because it's there. It'll be fun to have some tomorrow. But I see things like that, and those really matter, because those are American stories. Those are American facts. Those are little glimpses into the life that, you know, us, the plebs, live. I would hazard a guess that if you did the same study on the upper class, you wouldn't find the same maladies. Or perhaps you would, but you would find them for different reasons. So there's that. There's also the story that even more convicted felons have been not only encouraged but allowed to enlist in the Army and the Marines. If you go and you find the Associated Press story about it, you'll note that it also comes with a complete list of what those felonies are. You will not be inspired. Why? Why are we having to do this? Should be obvious enough. Because there aren't enough people who don't have tarnished records who are willing to go and fight and die for no good reason in the sands of Iraq or the stunning, unforgiving hills of Afghanistan. And it's not just a few more, it's twice as many. The U.S. Army doubled its use of moral waivers last year to cope with the personnel demands of George Bush's war on the people of Iraq. There were 511 moral waivers. Honest to God, that's what they call them. Moral waivers. For people with felony convictions. The year before, in 2006, there had been 249. You want to hear the list? You're going to love this. 87 of the moral waivers were soldiers convicted of assault or maiming. 130 convicted of non-cannabis related drug offenses. 7. Sit down. 7. You're probably already sitting. This is a computer radio show. 7 convicted of making terrorist threats. And best of all, or worst of all, there's no best with this kind of thing, 2 of the morality waivers were of people convicted of indecent behavior with a child. Nine sex offenders, 500 burglars and thieves, and 19 arsonists. This came out of the Oversight Committee of the House, where Henry Waxman is the chair of the oversight panel. He said that while providing opportunities to individuals who have served their sentences and rehabilitated themselves is important, the waivers are a sign that the U.S. military is stretched too thin. Yes, yes, yes. Morality waivers in the U.S. military, in total, reached 34,476 in the year 2006. In other words, 20% of all the enlisted ranks have a rap sheet. That is mind-boggling. And we wonder why things like massacres happen. And I think about that poor young woman at Auburn University who was murdered by a man who was drummed out of the military in Iraq for committing an assault and came home and his mama said he just ain't been right since he got back. Hear it again. 87 assaults or maiming convictions. 130 non-cannabis related drug offenses. Yeah, because we can't have the potheads in the military. 7 terrorist threat makers. 2 indecent behaviors with a child. 500 burglars and thieves, 19 arsonists, and 9 sex offenders. That's too stunning for me to say something smart-assed about it. It just is. Meanwhile, down in New Orleans today, George Bush attended a press conference with the Prime Minister of Canada, Stephen Harper, and with Mexican President Felipe Calderon. He was asked a question, George was. He was asked, well, you hear it for yourself.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. For President Bush, how deep and how long will the economic recession be in the United States, and how will it affect Mexico? And what is your perspective, Mr. President, of the reform presented by President Calderon in Mexico? And for all three of you, what's the security context that exists with regard to what's happening to NAFTA in and the FTA with Colombia after Colombia carried out a military invasion in Ecuador?
First of all, we're not in a recession. We're in a slowdown.
You heard it. Every single human being who knows anything about economics, the economy, or anything related to the subject says plainly this is a recession. The boy in the bubble, however, still thinks it's just a slowdown. I mentioned the closing price of oil today, $117 and change. It gets worse. Light sweet crude, love it on pancakes, for May delivery, this would be futures, not current, for futures, for May delivery, went all the way up to $119.90 before retreating to settle up $1.89 at a record $119.37 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange today. Brought on by a weak dollar, concerns about crude supplies from some key producers, and the end of the May contract. For the first time today, with the dollar's fall to a new low against the euro, the average price for a gallon of regular unleaded gasoline went to $3.51 a gallon nationally. It's a slowdown. Experts are predicting $4 a gallon gasoline. That's easy. Question is, when do we hit 5 and 6? Another expert thinks gas prices will rise only another 10 cents to 20 cents nationally. Oh, only a dime to 20 cents. Oh, well, okay, we can handle that. The highest prices then in the country would be about $4.15 a gallon in California and around $3.50 in New Jersey. New Jersey typically has the cheapest gas in the nation. The dollar's in the tank, and oil prices continue to rise because people are a little bit antsy about places like Nigeria's ability to deliver oil, Saudi Arabia's, Iraq's, Iraq, yeah. Remember when you remember when they told us that the Iraq war was going to pay for itself in oil sales? Man, that was a long time ago on the Carnival Midway, wasn't it? Hi, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi. Am I on?
Yes, you are.
This is Bob.
This is Bob.
Oh, my God, it's crazy. I got to tell you, it's crazy. I just somebody just gave me a piece of paper today, and Barack Obama's name was not on it.
Huh?
Oh, you haven't been following the news, have you? Everybody's going. This is Joe Vecchio, by the way.
Oh, Jesus, Joe. Don't do that to me. What's up?
Everybody has been going ape crap today because apparently, you know, Hillary is part of a normal part of a campaign, was producing sample ballots for the Pennsylvania primary that did not have Barack Obama's name on it. And, of course, it's a sample ballot. It's actually, it wasn't even a sample ballot. It was a flyer. So everybody's going crazy over it. They're freaking out on Daily Coast. Atrios had to put up a post saying, you know, this is not that big a deal. Stop freaking! And our good friend Fudd in the Bart Cop chat room is like, people are just going nuts. I don't understand it. People are just going nuts. So.
And they're going to keep going until about August the 28th. That's when the Democratic Convention ends.
But, you know, I thought, you know, I just got home a little while ago, and I've been studying for my test, and I just checked up on the news, and I read all this stuff about, you know, oh, my God, no names on the ballots. You know, it's Hillary. She's going crazy. And I'm just shaking my head over the whole thing. And, you know, and so I thought I'd have to call you in. So,
in other words, she was putting out flyers for herself, and she wasn't including Barack Obama? Oh, my God.
Well, it's just kind of standard operating procedure. You know, you put out a little stamp, you know, especially in Pennsylvania. You know, Atrios, who lives there, talks about
it. No. I get it. Like, yeah.
But of course, this being the season that it is, and these being the Democrats that we have today, everybody's pulling their hair out and running around in circles and then standing in a bucket of water or something, you know, putting bags over their heads.
Now I have to put my foot in the bucket and sing.
That's yeah. Right. Exactly.
I'm far more disgusted with her Osama bin Laden ad, personally, Joe.
It doesn't all matter to me. You know, I mean, I look at all of it, and it's like, you know what? First of all, whoever wins the primary, odds are, is going to be president. Okay, and I'm for both of them. Okay, I'm not going to get into any of the negative bash. I happen to like both of them for certain reasons. Okay, and there are things that I dislike about either one, but you know what? Consider the alternative. Okay? The alternative is, hey, you kids, get off of my lawn!
Grandpa Munster McCain.
Exactly.
Hey, Herman.
Herman, I got the machine running now. Do you want to put the kid in there?
You want to put Iran in the machine now? I don't know. One of these days, John McCain may turn into a bat and fly out the window, or into a wall, more likely.
Well, I'm glad to get the opportunity to talk. I know I haven't been on the air for a while, and you and I have spoken about this, and it's all just financial. And going back to what you were just talking about, you know, we've been in a recession for the last 7 years. For those of us who are at or near the bottom, it's been a recession for us. And by the way, gas has hit in a couple of places here in Chicago, $4 a gallon or very close to it. So it's $3.99 at one place the other day. And I'm riding the bus, so I'm just looking at the thing and I'm shaking my head. And I get on the bus and I point to the bus driver and I talk to the bus driver and I point to the sign and said, this is why I ride the bus. My transportation budget is $20 per week, period.
Yeah, five gallons of gas won't get you to work and back 5 days a week, will it?
Sure, and you have a lot of, there's a lot of places in this country, you know, granted Chicago is probably about the most expensive, one of the most expensive places to get gas here in the country, but there are a lot of people who work in places that there's no public transportation at all. You know, you're talking out in the burbs or out in, you know, the deep south or places like that where they have the big, whatever manufacturing plants there are, but there's nothing nearby, and you have to drive a certain amount of time to get there. And the salaries they pay some of their people, they're just barely paying them enough to pay for the gas. You know, you're working for gas money now. And food money. Food's gone through the roof, too. So, you know, and here I am. Here I sit in my place.
But we're talking about flag lapel pins.
Friday, I'll be collecting unemployment, which I still love. I'll be getting $116 a week while I look for another job. And that's my budget. You know, and George Bush, you know, what does he know from that? You know, when has he ever cared about that?
That would be never.
Never? Yeah, you know.
Not only not cared, not known. They're in... That, like I said, that soundbite I played, Joe, was from New Orleans. He went to hobnob with the President of Mexico and the Prime Minister of Canada in New Orleans.
Greg Palast, were you referring to Greg Palast's article about that?
Well, I didn't, but I saw it, yeah.
Because I read that article, and I like Greg a lot, and he was saying that basically this was put together by the big corporations, who, of course, Bush and the President of Mexico and all those other people work for, all these politicians work for. And it's basically to try to weaken laws that make it difficult for them to... But what, apparently, according to the article in Palace, what they want to do is bring cheap Chinese goods in through Mexico and then distribute them to the United States from Mexico to kind of get around import-export stuff.
Dirty bastards.
So, you know, I don't expect anything better from them. That's what they are. That's who they are. How many, you know, I've talked to you about this before, Bob, in private and maybe a couple times on the radio, too. So these people, you know, you can sum them up in basically three terms. Number one, they're the only people in the world, at least the only ones that count. Number two, the only thing that's real is money. And number three, the world ends when they die. That's how you can sum these people up. You and me and everybody out there listening on the horn out there, and all the fans of my show when I'm on the air, and then everybody listens to the horn and all the other radio stations, we're not human. The only reason we exist is to help them make more money.
That's why, probably before you got a chance to hear, Joe, but that's why I was talking a little bit ago about the fact that we are the plebs. We're not the equestrian class. We're not the warrior class. We're not the knights or the senators. We're the plebs. We're the people who get up and work every day. We're the ones busy living lives of quiet desperation.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we're supposed to be. That's the way they think of us, Joe.
And that's the way they like us. And, you know, when we're desperate, it makes it easier for them because...
When we're desperate, their lives are good.
Sure, because that way we'll accept less, knowing that we're happy to get just what we have. And they can push us around more. You know, I went to apply for a job that pays $6.50 an hour, and I have to call them back and practically beg them to let me have an interview. This is a job that pays $6.50 an hour. And all they're really doing is looking for the people they can push around more. And that's really all they're doing.
We're sorry, Mr. Vecchio. You're overqualified insofar as you're not terrified enough.
That's pretty much it. Because I do tend to go into interviews with a rather laid-back attitude, you know. I don't go in like that Martin Short character where he's a nervous guy smoking a cigarette. I knew that.
I hadn't thought about that in forever.
You know, so, but yeah, and you know, I'm taking this course, which apparently I got myself a little confused. The course that I'm taking for the A-plus certification for computers is only going to take about 3 months, and hopefully with that I can get a nice entry-level IT-type position. You know, pays $10-$11 an hour. People say, well, that's not a lot of money. Well, you know, I did my taxes recently, and I figured my taxes for this year and last year and the year before. In the last 3 years combined, Bob, I've made less than $20,000, okay? So a full-time $10 an hour job where I'm working 40 hours a week that lasts for a whole year will be more money than I've made in the last 3 years combined, okay?
And
put that into perspective.
Yeah, and for the fact of the matter is, Joe, you are emblematic of a whole lot of America. This isn't Joe's problem. This is America's problem.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm better off than a lot of people. I'm not homeless. I may not live in luxury, but at least I have a roof over my head. I can eat every day.
The weather doesn't come in where you live.
Exactly. Exactly. And I have, you know, I don't want to say nice roommates because I don't know them that well, but roommates who leave me the heck alone. And, you know, and generally speaking, when I'm not studying specifically, I come home at night and and I figured out how to watch sports, live sports, over the computer. So I'll sit there and I'll watch my Braves play, and on the weekends I'll watch my Battlestar Galactica and my Doctor Who.
Who's the 12th Cylon?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, I think Bush is a Cylon, but that's another story. no, he can't be because of the program.
No. Cheney's the Cylon. Cheney's the Cylon.
But no, I'll sit there and I'll do that, and you know, maybe I'll go out and hang out with a buddy. In fact, I was hanging out with my good friend Pete, Fane of Fascistan, yesterday because he lives not far from me. We watched the Mets and Phillies play. You know, just hung out with him, and that's basically my life. And I would like to get just a nice, quiet job where I can save up a few bucks and live like this, but with my overhead very low. I only pay about $200 a month for rent, and plus, you know, bills and utilities.
And that's the point, Joe. America's not asking for the steak and eggs every morning for breakfast.
Right, exactly.
America is mostly asking for a fighting shot for its kids. And some level of respect in its old age, and in between the two, a chance to have something approaching meaning in life.
Well, that's too much to ask for.
And it is, and with this crowd, it is way too daggum much to ask for. You're exactly right.
No. It's just, I like to bitch and moan about stuff, and I know I have it better than most people, but that doesn't necessarily mean I like where I'm at. And I certainly want the people who are, you know, beneath me economically, however many there are, I want them to have a better life, too. I wrote a post a long time ago on the blog called Happy and Prosperous Morons. And basically my idea was, look, I don't really care if they're morons. And I'm talking, you know, specifically about the right-wingers who buy into the BS, okay? The difference between them and me is they want me to be as miserable as they are, because in their minds, misery loves company. You know, they want to bring us down to their level. Because, well, you can't have fun and laugh. I got to work hard, bale and hay for a living, so you got to be miserable too. I don't want it to be like that. I want them to be happy. And I want to live in a country and in a world where everybody is happy and prosperous. And even if they're going to be morons, they still have the right to be happy and prosperous. But they don't want that for us.
No, that's not Joe. That's not.
They want the Walmart society. They want to force it on us.
That's not a two-way street. Hey, Joe, I've got to cut it short. I'm doing the show short tonight because I'm sneaking out and treating Agnes to dinner for her birthday.
Oh, that's great. Well, tell her happy birthday for me.
I sure will. Good to hear from you, brother.
Great talking to you, and I was glad I was able to get on.
I am too. Don't be a stranger. All right.
I try not to.
All right. Later, Joe.
Bye
now. That is. Horn host Joe Vecchio on extended hiatus. Horn host without portfolio. How's that, Joe? So we're going to knock off a little bit early. Hope you don't mind. Agnes has been very, very busy raising grandchildren, and I thought maybe the opportunity to sneak out and do, you know, like the grown-up thing where she has dinner without a towel over her shoulder from baby burping might be nice, and she agreed. Thanks, everybody, for joining in. We'll be back tomorrow night with prayer meeting. Everything else for the rest of the evening is a rerun. Sorry, but we'll be back.
Well, how long has that train been gone? Tell me how long. Has that train been gone? I ain't had no real good loving since my baby been gone. Which way did it go? You know I wanna know. Which way did it go? Baby, I wanna know. I ain't had no real good loving since my baby got on board.
hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Okie dokie. Hour number three underway. You know the phone number, right? 877-443-2366 if you are wanting us to do the toll-free thing, which we'll be happy to do. If, however, the phone company doesn't stick it to you for making a long-distance call, 304-658-3333. Easy enough, right? Email rolls into bob@headonradio.com. I don't say that enough, I'm told. So I'm trying to sort of make amends. All right, now, let's see. Earmarks and McCain. McCain and earmarks. Just not necessarily for everybody, but just sort of to remind people who think that shots of whiskey and scratching one's nose actually matters in the grand scheme of things. I think I'm more pissed off at those people than I am anybody else, even the Republicans sometimes. But to go back to where we were, just to review, yesterday, Insane McCain, Mad Dog McCain, John McBush, John McSame, the McCain-Churian McCain did it, shows up on This Week with George Snuffleupagus. And he starts telling us about what a tough guy he's going to be when it comes to those nasty old earmarks.
Here's $100 billion right here for you, George. 2 years in a row, last 2 years, the President of the United States has signed into law two big spending pork barrel laden bills worth $35 billion. That increases the budget.
John, just between us, who put the pork in there? That would be your party. Your party is massively more responsible for more reckless spending than Democrats have ever dreamed of being. You know, we do stupid stuff like building roads and bridges and transportation systems and hospitals and... You guys, bridge to nowhere. But never mind.
The baseline of the budget in the years before that, $65 billion. You do away with those. There's $100 billion right there before you
Okay, so he's a tough guy. He's going to get after the earmarks. So today, John McCain went to Geese Bend, Alabama. Geese Bend is across the river, the Alabama River, from the town on the other side, Camden, Alabama. And in order to get from Geese Bend to Camden, you have to ride a ferry, or else it's an 80-mile round-trip drive. Well, he went to Alabama today. On what he's calling the It's Time for Action tour. And he says he's going to spotlight forgotten Americans.
We will travel to areas of this country that in many ways have been forgotten and left behind.
And that's how he wound up in what he called the remote town of Geese Bend, across the river from Camden. It's only remote because of the absence of roads and bridges. You know, stuff that Democrats spend money on. But in John McCain's world, it's an earmark. There's only one problem. The ferry between Geese Bend, Alabama and Camden, Alabama was built with an earmark! It was only able to be reopened in 2006 because of an earmark, in the form of a federal grant that allowed the ferry to reopen in 2006. And here's the fun part. Because 44 years ago, county leaders closed the ferry to keep African-American residents of Geese Bend from crossing the river to the county seat to demand full civil rights. So let's review. John McCain hates earmarks. John McCain would therefore have done away with this earmark that reopened the ferry between Gee's Bend, Alabama, and Camden. Might be Gee's Bend. I think it's Gee, though. And that ferry was closed so as to keep African Americans from trying to become full-fledged citizens of the United States. You heard him there. He's going to get do away with the pork barrel-laden bills. So there's a question for John McCain. Are you against earmarks even when they facilitate travel that arguably saves gasoline and makes it possible for people who live in minority communities to go to the seat of government? Are you against those too, John? Really? You are? Oh, that's pork, isn't it, John? Making it possible for people to go and register to vote. That's pork. Making it possible for people to turn an 80-mile round trip into a 10-mile round trip. That's pork, isn't it, John? See, that's the thing. That's the kind of stuff you get into when you start making blanket statements like, I'm going to get rid of all the earmarks. This is just...
Senator McCain, maybe this isn't the best place in the world for you to go hating on earmarks. Senator McCain, this isn't going to play very well.
Well, never mind, Senator McCain. Those people weren't going to vote for you in the first place, now, were they? Lord God. I didn't know that there were still... And this... I mean, you know, like Maine or the Great Northwest, things like that. I assumed that there's still some ferries and so forth. Staten Island Ferry in New York, you know, that kind of thing. I didn't know there were still, in the flyover country, the heart of America, places where... Wow, do I just sound sort of elitist, I guess. Oh, there he goes, being elitist. Next thing you know, he'll scratch his nose. This is... I didn't know that there were places like Gee's Bend that were so, as isolated as that, but I'm sure there are. Obviously now. Not just... John McCain. Simply astonishing. And then, well... Trying to decide here whether we... take a powder on John McCain for a little bit. Let's stay after John for a little bit. Seeing as how last week during the pageant in Pennsylvania, Barack Obama was asked the loaded question that had been spoon-fed to him by Sean Hannity, spoon-fed to Judas Snuffleupagus, that is. Seeing as how he had to be asked questions about his relationship with a former member of the Weather Underground. Reckon it might be fair to ask John McCain about a few of the weirdos that he runs around with? He has yet to explain his tight little association with people like convicted felon and former Watergate burglar G. Gordon Liddy. Yeah, Liddy's still a convicted felon. Liddy is still a piece of trash. Liddy got on the publicly owned airwaves in the 90s and gave hints on how best to kill a federal agent. Liddy refers to McCain as a good personal friend. Niner. He says Niner on his show, if you've ever... It's just silly. McCain's been on Liddy's show. McCain's website provides call-in info for Liddy's show. And Liddy is still an unrepentant Watergate burglar. But unlike the situation where Barack Obama had to be asked about his knowledge of or acquaintanceship with a former member of the Weather Underground, well, nobody's asking John McCain about his bosom buddy, G. Gordon Liddy. Now, to be fair, after last week, I asked some questions, and apparently others are asking them as well, about the fact that since, again, Barack Obama was called on to answer for, explain for, take the heat for everything that the Reverend Jeremiah Wright has ever said, why wasn't anybody leaning on John McCain about that nasty old televangelical freak, John Hagee? Lo and behold, I don't know, you know, maybe a little bit of this did rub off on George Snuffleupagus. Because he finally got around to asking McCain about it. Oh, this whole segment with George Snuffleupagus was just a piece of work.
But his relationship with Mr. Ayers is open to question.
Why?
And because if you're going to associate and have as a friend and serve on a board and have a guy kick off your campaign that says he's unrepentant, that he wished he'd bombed more, and then the worst thing of all that I think really indicates...
But see, John McCain wishes he'd never been shot out of the sky by that surface-to-air missile over North Vietnam, doesn't he? That means John McCain wishes he'd bombed more peasant huts, doesn't it? John McCain remains to this day unrepentant for what he did to North Vietnamese peasants. The mothers, the fathers, the grandmothers, the grandfathers, aunts, uncles, cousins, brothers, sisters, little babies, babies in the womb that he slaughtered with, you know, fun stuff like napalm. Now here he is, leaning on Barack Obama over Mr. Ayers, who was a member of the Weather Underground. Big deal. But he wants to talk about being unrepentant?
But his relationship with Mr. Ayers is open to question.
Why?
And because if you're going to associate and have as a friend and serve on a board and have a guy kick off your campaign that says he's unrepentant, that he wished he'd bombed more, and then the worst thing of all that I think really indicates Senator Obama's attitude is he had the incredible statement that he compared Mr. Ayers, an unrepentant terrorist, with Senator Tom Coburn. Senator Coburn, a physician.
Senator Tom Coburn is insane. Senator Tom Coburn, you may recall, is the senator from Oklahoma who, when running for his Senate seat, declared that the junior high schools of Oklahoma are suffering an epidemic of lesbianism. Really, not kidding.
Who goes to Oklahoma on the weekends and brings babies into life, comparing those two, I mean, that...
Oh, wait a minute, John, I think you just screwed up. You said that Tom Coburn goes to Oklahoma on the weekends and brings babies into life. We all know that life begins whenever a Republican opens a bank book for a little fertilized egg, right? Oh, the right-to-lifers aren't going to be happy with you.
That's not... That's an attitude, frankly, that certainly isn't in keeping with the overall attitude
Senator
of the American
Obama
people.
Said,
and it's very insulting to a great man, a great doctor, a great humanitarian.
Oh, stop it. There is nothing great about Tom Coburn. The man is, by any measure, nuttier than a Christmas fruitcake. This is one of those family values people. This is who do you think Sally Kern, that hateful thing in Oklahoma who said that gay people are worse than terrorists, who do you think she got her cues from? Who do you think runs the Republican Party in Oklahoma? Why, people like Senator Jim Inhofe and Senator Tom Coburn, that's who.
To compare him, with a guy who says, on after 2001, I wish we had bombed more. I had a reconciliation with the anti-war movement. One of the great experiences of my life was to get to know and love David Ifshin. I had a reconciliation with the Vietnamese when we normalized relations. But how can you countenance someone who was engaged in bombings which could have or did kill innocent people?
Senator Obama says he was 8 years old when that was happening.
But he became friends with him and spent time with him while the guy...
That's a hell of a standard. Now you're holding Senator Obama responsible for things that were done when he was 8, but that's not surprising after all. We had the whole flap a few months ago where he was called on the carpet for saying that he wanted to be president when he was in kindergarten. This presidential campaign is going to... What going to? This presidential campaign makes me feel like we've already gone down the rabbit hole. John McCain had a reconciliation with the anti-war movement. John McCain had a reconciliation with the Vietnamese. Reckon how he reconciled with the people that he slew. How did John McCain have a reconciliation with the North Vietnamese that he slaughtered deliberately and intentionally from 40,000 feet in the air? How'd that reconciliation go for you there, John, huh?
It was unrepentant over his activities as a member of a terrorist organization, the Weatherman. And then to compare him with Dr. Tom Coburn, who spends so much of his life bringing babies into this world.
He just said Tom Coburn goes home on the weekends and brings babies into life. Now, it's either so much of his life or it's weekends, John. You can't have it both ways.
That, in my view, is really borders on outrage.
He also pointed out that he and Mr. Ayers have a very loose relationship. They live in the same neighborhood. There was an organizing meeting many, many years ago. He says in his house, and he says, frankly, I don't agree with these comments that Mr. Ayers made.
Doesn't agree with him. Does he condemn him? Would he condemn someone who says that they're unrepentant and wish that they had bombed more?
Does that mean it's okay for us to condemn you, John McCain? Because you stand in need of profound condemnation. No one made you. No one made you bomb those villages in Vietnam. There might even have been some itsy bitsy teensy weensy tiny little molecular level microscopic bit of something in what passes for your conscience that knew it was wrong and you did it anyway, John. You stand condemned.
Compare him to a doctor, one of the great humanitarian, and in my view, one of the greatest spokesperson for the rights of the unborn.
Well,
in America.
Tom Coburn is one of the greatest spokespersons for the rights of the unborn. Horse crap. Tom Coburn is a repig licking. Tom Coburn hates welfare. Tom Coburn hates any form of prenatal care that the government has a hand in. Tom Coburn, as a repiglican, despises food stamps. He loathes WIC, the program for food for women and infant children. He's one of the greatest spokesmen for the rights of the unborn. How is he on the born, John? How is he on the already on the ground? How is he on the non-fetus infant category? Not so good, huh, John?
You say he should condemn these comments.
Sure.
A lot of Senator Obama's allies and others say that you should condemn the comments of Reverend John Hagee, an evangelical pastor.
Oh, I do. And I did. I said that any comments that he made about the Catholic Church, I strongly condemn.
Yet you solicited and accepted his endorsement.
Yes, indeed I did. And I condemned the comments that he made concerning the Catholic Church.
But you're going to hold on to his endorsement. Your own campaign acknowledged that you should have done a better job of vetting Pastor Hagee.
Oh, sure.
So was it a mistake to solicit and accept his endorsement?
Oh, probably. Sure. But the, I admire and respect Dr. Hagee's leadership of the...
I admire and respect the leadership of... Jesus, you know where that's going. You condemn him for the leadership that he's shown in condemning Catholics. But you admire the rest of his leadership. You know that... I'm sorry, that's... Go figure. A little nutty in my book.
His church, I admire and appreciate his advocacy for the state of Israel, the independence and freedom of the state of Israel. I condemn remarks that are made that has anything to do, which is condemning of the Catholic Church. But so
you don't want to want his endorsement.
Many things. I'm glad to have his endorsement. I condemn.
Now wait a minute. Flip flop, flip flop, flip flop, flip flop. A minute ago, he was saying it was probably a mistake, and they didn't vet him well enough, and really probably shouldn't have gone after his endorsement. But now he's glad to have it. Talk about having your cake and eating it too.
Remarks that are anyway viewed as anti anything.
Let's
and
talk.
Thanks for asking.
Let's talk about it.
And thanks for asking. Oh, by God, if I had a gun in my pocket, George Snuffleupagus, I'd blow your flipping brains out right now. How dare you ask me questions like that? What the hell's going on here? I'm used to coming on this show and getting handed snowballs. I'm used to just batting the softballs right out of the park. What are you doing asking me serious stuff? What's going on here, George? We're going to have a talk. Do I have to call the mouse up there in the chairman's office at Disney and get to straighten your ass up? What do you think you're doing? I'm John McCain. I'm a war hero. I was in the Hanoi Hilton. Kiss my butt. Thanks for asking. That nervous little laugh. Email, I remind you that when the Weather Underground was at large, McCain was in the Hanoi Hilton. He knows nothing about the organization except what his wingnut buddies have told him. I remember those days. And nobody would ever rat out the Weather Underground in those days because everyone who was not a right-winger was on their side. It was kind of like the spirit of Paul Revere. Those days were as bad as these days. Were they? Really? I mean, I was a kid, so I can't speak to that. I can't imagine anything short of maybe the actual Great Depression being worse than what we have now. Maybe the actual shooting part of the Civil War. But I can't imagine much else. Now, let's see here. Let's get a little bit away from John McCain for a minute, although in a way it's not that far. The big New York Times report that rolled out in its Sunday edition yesterday that stated sort of the obvious, if you will. The obvious being that the United States military had groomed, that's the word that's used in the headline here, groomed television analysts. What it boils down to, according to the Reuters report, many U.S. military analysts used as commentators regarding Iraq by television networks have been groomed by the Pentagon. Leaving, the report says, some feel, I don't know who some are, except to say that I guess I'm a little bit of some, feeling that they were manipulated to report favorably on the Bush administration. And I say I'm a little bit of some because it's, duh, it's the Pentagon. Forget about it, Jake. It's Chinatown. This is what they do. But I guess it comes as a great surprise to find out that all of these former generals and admirals and field marshals and whatnot that were on the air 24/7 as shock and awe was raining down on the neighborhoods of Baghdad and mud huts where mothers and children were trying simply to live their lives. I suppose it comes as a shock that these well-coiffed, groomed former kill jock leaders were actually dummies, plants for the Pentagon. According to the New York Times, records and interviews show how the Bush administration has used its control over access and information in an effort to transform the analysts into a kind of media Trojan horse. Oh, they're Trojans, all right. An instrument intended to shape terrorism coverage from the inside of the major TV and radio networks. Terrorism coverage? Now it's terrorism coverage? No, isn't this just sort of an extension of what we're... It's not even the war anymore? It's all terrorism all the time? Holy mackerel. The Pentagon says that the analysts were only given accurate information. Really? How many analysts were on the air talking about the heroic last stand of... Why can't I remember her name anymore from Palestine, West Virginia, who isn't Lindy England? Must be on a brain cell that I subsequently killed. And that was accurate information when we heard the stories of how her vehicle had rolled over and she was beset by ferocious Iraqi fighters. And that she emptied her weapon. She shot till she couldn't shoot anymore. And then the Iraqis descended upon her and violated her young, nubile American body. Come on. How many analysts? CNN, MSNBC, CNBC, Headline News, CBS, NBC, ABC, God knows, Fox. And every one of them had an expert military analyst who the Pentagon says was given only accurate information, sitting there lying their asses off. They were only given accurate information. And you and me, we're supposed to swallow that? Kind of a challenge, isn't it? By the way, a couple of right-wingers, one of them being John Podoritz, made some remarks about the New York Times story. He said, Barstow's endless tale reveals nothing more than that the Pentagon treated former military personnel like VIPs, courted them, and served them extremely well in hopes of getting the kind of coverage that would counteract the nastier stuff written about the Defense Department in the media.
Really?
Mr. Podhoritz, would you care to point me toward the nasty stuff that was written about the Defense Department in the media? Because I was reading a whole lot of media back then when the war was starting against the poor, benighted people of Iraq. And I can't remember any nasty stuff being written about the Defense Department because it was all cheerleading, rah, 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 all the time with a quote in every story from another one of those dummied up, ginned up, frauded up, rubed up, faked up military analysts to whom the Pentagon had given nothing but accurate information. Max Boot. Yeah, that's a real name, who is apparently some sort of neocon freak, asks, why did the Times decide this story is so important? After all, it's no secret that the Pentagon and every other branch of government routinely provides background briefings to journalists and tries to influence their coverage by carefully doling out access. All this is part and parcel of the daily grind of Washington journalism, in which the Times is, of course, a leading participant.
Huh?
That makes no sense. Is he saying now that these military analysts who were brought on to television programs and cited in newspaper reports and had on right-wing talk shows to blather away about what a wonderful, wonderful thing the attack on Iraq was? Is he saying that they somehow now qualify as journalists? Interesting, those two quotes. Podhoretz, I don't know. Podhoretz. Podhoretz and Boot. There's sort of a thread there, a common thread. The Pentagon treated former military personnel like VIPs, and all this is part and parcel of the daily grind of Washington journalism. Just another day. Keep moving. Don't look over here. These are not the droids you're looking for. In other words, a common thread that was most likely developed by the Pentagon itself to deal with this story, knowing that it was coming out, and another layer of mendacity by the Department of Defense. It never stops. But here's what it's all about. This is the quote from the New York Times that sort of leaps out. Internal Pentagon documents repeatedly refer to the military analysts as message force multipliers. Those people can do some of the most obscene things to an otherwise lovely language like English. Message force multipliers, or surrogates, who could be counted on to deliver administration themes and messages to millions of Americans in the form of their own opinions. There's the kicker, in the form of their own opinions. That's where the fraud lies, you see. It's fraud to bring somebody on or quote somebody who is supposedly is independent, who is actually carrying water officially for an undisclosed body, person, agency. Another quote, the access came with a condition. Participants were instructed not to quote their briefers directly or otherwise describe their contacts with the Pentagon. Name change. It's no longer the Pentagon, it's the Pentacon. Because that's what this was. This was a con. This was a tease. It was a blood tease. One participant of a hosted trip to Iraq in September 2003, General Nash of ABC, said some briefings were so clearly artificial that he joked to another group member that they were on the George Romney Memorial trip to Iraq, a reference to Mr. Romney's infamous claim that American officials had brainwashed him into supporting the Vietnam War during a tour there in 1965. Even they knew they were in... They knew they were in on the scam. And even to the people, the analysts, the so-called experts, who were in on the scam, realized that it was a nasty, cheesy little fraud. Mr. Robert Bevilacqua, a Fox analyst, was among those invited to a briefing in early 2003 about Iraq's purported stockpiles of illicit weapons. Mr. Robert McGinnis said he concluded that the analysts were being manipulated to convey a false sense of certainty about the evidence of the weapons. Yet he and Mr. Bevilacqua and the other analysts who attended the briefings did not share any misgivings with the American public. This is the death of the Fourth Estate, in case you were wondering. What a fraud. And you wonder how, what was it at one point, 90% of America said, woo, Keene, let's have some war. We dare wonder how that happened? With the exception of those of us who are dedicated to finding the facts, it's almost a natural state of affairs. When you feed people nothing but BS, can you reasonably expect that their breath is going to smell like rose water? This is that. Lordy. To the phones.
Bob, it's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Yeah, a few nights ago you said how this movie's going to play out.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
If McCain wins, I could tell you right now how this movie's going to play out. Look at German history from the late 1800s to about the early 1950s.
Okay.
Okay. At the height of the First World War, the Kaiser started becoming devastated about the amount of wounded and killed coming in, reports. And he asked his generals, is there anything we can do to come to our armistice with the Allied nations? And the general said, Your Highness, we couldn't stop this war if we wanted to. So much money has been invested in the German military industrial complex, and so much of the economy was tied in that they would have been economically ruined. And they were afraid to, even though it ended up happening anyway, what got Germany out was them doing what they did best under the Hitler regime, was going back to rearming themselves and making armaments.
Last week, when he had Colonel Wilkerson on, Mark Levine asked a similar question of Colonel Wilkerson. He said, you know, do you see an end to this? Is there an end in sight? Talking about Iraq. And Colonel Wilkerson said, no, I don't.
Well, he's absolutely right. And, you know, and that was the economic plan for Hitler, too. Constant warfare.
And that's the only thing that props up the economy, right?
No, it's not. It's the easy way out.
It's easier
but wait,
Kevin, it can't go on indefinitely. We can't keep writing hot checks. I mean, it's mathematical. Our ability to print more money and have any kind of stability to our monetary system has a finite sort of, I mean, it's finite, right? I mean, it doesn't go on forever. We can't just keep the presses rolling.
Well, that would be something for some administration way down the road to worry about.
See, I disagree with you. I don't think we can keep this up for another 4 years. I don't think we can keep it up for eight.
I don't think we can keep it up for another year, but hey, they don't care.
I got an email here that says Nancy Pelosi is already, it says that she's getting ready to cave on another $178 billion for Iraq.
Oh, yeah.
How long?
Hey, I don't know. All I can say is...
Yeah, here it is. It's from Democrats.com. Headline, Pelosi plans $178 billion blank check for Iraq.
And that's the thing. Our economy is so tied up in the military-industrial complex. I think for us to go a different route or alternate route, they're too scared to.
This just amazes me. If this is correct, Kevin, it says, despite the overwhelming opposition of the American people, Speaker Pelosi plans to rush a vote through Congress for another $178 billion blank check. I know it probably makes me sound sort of naive. Where's that money coming from?
We're borrowing it. Just like Hitler borrowed the money from the Bush family and Ford Motor Company.
So somewhere in the banking halls of the People's Republic of China, there is someone who is to the Bush family what the Bush family was to Hitler.
Yes. There has to be.
Holy cow.
That's the only way I see it going.
That just... It makes me speechless, Kevin. It does. Now, I'm being told that that's not entirely true, that she plans to, Pelosi intends to attach unemployment benefit extensions to the bill, so Dear Leader says, well, you know, I'll veto that. So this could be some brinksmanship and gamesmanship and trying to find an end game in an election year. Georgia's demanding a war funding bill that doesn't have anything else in it. And the thing that scares me to death is that based on what Shakespeare said is true and what's passed as prologue, Kevin, after he vetoes this bill, he'll get the clean bill that he wanted in the first place.
Yeah.
And that's not me being negative. That's me looking back at past practice. And, I mean, isn't that what this Democratic Congress has done every other time?
Oh, yeah.
Talk tough, get vetoed, roll over and wait for the belly scratch.
Yeah, well, it kind of reminds me of Animal House when Dean Wormigal double secret probation kind of thing.
Yeah. Double secret probation. Oh, my God. The federal government reduced to Animal House. I'm not criticizing you, but I think there's truth in it. Amazing. But I, honest to God, don't know how we keep this going. Maybe somebody knows the magic that I don't know, but the banking houses are going south. The New York Stock Exchange may correct itself all the way down to something around 10,000.
Oh, I couldn't go lower than that.
Or lower. And that unemployment rates rise, inflation, gas prices. It's really, what's the average right now? I saw the average gas price now is, what, $3.47? That's the national average. That means it's much higher in other places. We'll see. I don't know what happens to middle class America when gas hits $5, $6 a gallon.
Same thing that happened in middle class Germany when the Deutschmark was basically worthless.
And that is
$1 million for a loaf of bread. Even the, you know, I pray it doesn't. I had a neighbor who grew up during the Great Depression, and they used to play with the German money as kids because it was so worthless. Millions of dollars worth of German money.
Should have hung on to it. The money got better.
Well, yeah. Hopefully 50 years down the road or another 30 years after our economy's so wrecked, you know, some foreign country will come and occupy us and bail us out and rebuild our industries and all that, like we did for the Germans.
We're a debtor nation to Mexico. Imagine that. If you ran political ads, John McCain wants to continue more of the Bush administration. Under the Bush administration, the United States has become a debtor nation to Mexico.
Hey, well,
want some more?
You know what, Bob? Anything the Mexicans get out of us, they deserve.
Well, no. That's not what... Yeah, I'm not complaining about that. But,
you know, we did kind of screw them over, you know, in the 19th century.
Oh, I know. The Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
The Gadsden Purchase?
Yeah.
It's not much of a purchase when you got a gun to your head, but never mind.
Oh, yeah. We did kind of screw them over.
That kind of, you know, that kind of makes a mugging. Oh, no, I purchased her purse from her.
Yeah.
Right.
I purchased your purse for a penny.
Yeah. Yeah, this, I'm going to trade you this 10 cent piece of ammunition, which I will now remove from my gun and hand to you, and you're going to give me your wallet instead. Otherwise,
you get the you don't get the whole 10-cent piece of ammunition. You only get the 4-cent bullet in the back of your head.
Oh yeah.
Funny how we have a habit of doing business that way.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, it happened in Japan.
Yeah, it did. We've done it to a lot of people.
Oh yeah.
The question is, do the chickens come home to roost?
Well, it's happening now.
And that's not something I look forward to, or that I relish, or that I want to happen. But I just don't see it not happening, Kevin, if there is a McCain presidency. If there is not a McCain presidency, if it's a Clinton or an Obama presidency, they're going to have to work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for 4 solid years to keep it from happening anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Fortunately, being Democrats, they might actually do that.
Oh, yeah. Well, you see, the thing is, this has been planned out years before. And, you know, basically the right wing and those who can afford to, you know, particularly Bush family, has basically set themselves up financially and politically where they can just simply move off elsewhere.
Sure. Because when real estate values go down here, they'll go up somewhere else.
Yeah, you know, and that's just the way it is. You know, why do you think they bought all that land in Paraguay?
Right up by the Bolivian border.
Oh, yeah.
I hear it's lovely there this time of year.
Yeah.
Hey, Kevin, I got to roll along. We're running out of time.
Oh, okay, though.
All right, later.
Yeah, bye.
Bye now. It's like that great line from The In-Laws where Peter Falk says, I don't know what people are going to do when a six-pack of Budweiser costs $1,400. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Hey, Luke, what's up?
Well, I kept that one brain cell dry. The name you were looking for was Jessica Lynch.
Thank you. Thank you. I forget her every time.
Well, you know, well, like I say, it's able to be, but it was that long ago. I mean, and we now can say long ago, you know, in this living hell we live in. You know, like I say, here's a girl that essentially was almost being held prisoner by her own people once she got back because they were afraid she was going to tell the truth.
Yeah. And it's not just Jessica Lynch. You wonder about these military analysts when they were opining on the death of Pat Tillman.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, you're talking about that. They were talking yesterday on Howie's show. He had John Aravosa, who's one of the bloggers on.
America Blog, yeah.
America Blog. He said, you know, I've never been asked, you know, who funds me? Who do I work for? He said, you know, he went down the whole list of all the different things. He says, you know, no one's ever asked me. And he said, you know, isn't it amazing, though, and I'm sure it was the same way with them. He said, no one ever, why is it that TV news will happily put anybody on they claim as an expert but not tell you who they are? You know, I mean, who do you have deals with? You know, if you're working for such and such, fine, put it, you know, so they can run it underneath your name.
Sort of reminds me of the story that came out a month or so ago about the lung cancer study from Cornell University that turns out to have been funded by a foundation that was set up by Big Tobacco.
Oh, yeah.
This was the lung cancer study that showed that lung cancer was more and more curable.
Well, what did it used to be? It used to be a thing called the Tobacco Institute.
Yes, indeedy.
But you used to put out those things. Oh, by the way, who's paying for it? The tobacco companies.
That's why I'm a little bit less than taken or taken in, if you will, by the automobile safety numbers that come for the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety.
Because no one ever tells you who they are. Well, you know, it's one day I got looking, just going through something, and I saw something, I think it was on Media Matters. And, you know, every time you see over on the Bruce Blitzer show, you see Mr. Snyder come out. And how many people know Mr. Snyder works for a right-wing think tank? In his daytime job.
Do you think that they'll recognize him when Tony Snow shows up as an employee of CNN?
But you know what I mean? It is one of
No, you know that's true, right?
Oh, yeah. Hey, I have no doubt of it.
Tony Snow has joined CNN.
Oh, gosh. Well, what do we expect? I mean, you're sitting there with Beck on headline news. And amazingly enough, no one at CNN seems to pretend that they don't know who he is.
And his ratings stink, and
well,
he's still there.
Well, you were talking about Alan Keyes a while ago. Just remember, like, I saw somebody today said Alan Keyes could get beaten by a cockroach in a fight. But, you know, you're talking about G. Gordon. Remember, G. Gordon one time said that if Richard Nixon had told him to meet somebody on the corner of such and such and such and such in Washington in D.C. and kill him, he said he would have done it. He said, why? I said, because he's the president.
Well, he was a strict adherent of if the president does it, it's not illegal.
If the president tells me to murder, then murder is no longer illegal because I'm doing it for my country.
But nobody's wearing John McCain out about him. Oh, yeah, they can have a big freak out about Ayers and Obama, who, you know, spoke to each other 8 years ago. But now let's not ask John McCain about that touchy-feely relationship he has with G. Gordon Liddy.
But, you know, it is one of those things where, like you said, you were talking about it, you know, it's like, the news, what we laughingly call the news, gets to that point now. It's like, say, every time somebody's coming on, you're wanting to ask them, you know, who are you and who do you work for and whose car are you carrying in your pocket right now, you know. You know, when you see all these different people, they were talking the thing you were talking about, they were talking about Tori Clark.
Yes.
She essentially was sort of managing where all these people go, who gets sent to who. So it's sort of like, well, she no longer works for the government, we think.
Why isn't this just a part of journalistic ethics, Luke?
Well, I agree. I mean, you know, if I say before you let somebody on your show, per se, you know what I mean, as an expert, you better know who that person is. I mean, you know, it's like say, you know, you're going to put somebody on one day, and, you know, by the time they're done, the time you get them off the air, they're going, kill them all.
That's my point, though. If I've got somebody here on the show,
you've done a little research and know who they are, basically.
Yeah. I mean, Paul Waldman's going to be on the show maybe in the next week or so to talk about The Real McCain, or the McCain book that he did with David Brock. And I'll go through the bio again and explain, you know, this is Paul Waldman. Paul Waldman does this. And I don't think he'd want me to do any other.
No. I mean, you know, it's one of those things. If you ain't got nothing to hide, you ain't afraid to tell people what you do. You know, some of these people nowadays, it's like, say, you got to wonder, you know, it's like, say, they're wanting to go, no, don't use my picture. Somebody might recognize me. Like, what are you, the witness protection program? What?
I can't come up with another answer, Luke, except to say that the media are deliberately, ethically bankrupt.
Well, you know, it was the thing. I always go back to my favorite one. Still has to be Colin Powell in the cartoons. You know, here we are showing the mobile labs. We don't have any pictures of them, so here we're going to show you cartoons.
Right. Or, you know, you mentioned Howie a minute ago, Howie Kurtz. Never brings out, seldom, I mean, you've got to, like, go after him with the flat end of a shovel to get him to admit who his wife works for.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's the same thing, you know, like with Matthews. You know, he don't tell who his wife works for either, most of the time, unless you just about beat him with a stick. You know, but like you say, it's one of those things. It's like, if people, if you don't ask the questions, you ain't going to find out nothing. And most of these people act like, how dare you ask me a question?
And I got to admit, I wasn't real good back then of asking, why is this general on CNN or why is that general on NBC? I just figured that there's a speaker bureau of retired generals, that it's part of the gig. It's part of the double dip. Once you've gotten out of the military, you go out and you collect a check for being an opinion.
Or something, yeah.
But then it turns out that like I said, you know, my first inclination was to go, well, duh. But, you know, I wasn't, no. When all this was going down, I just sort of took it at face value that, you know. But then again, I look at things as, you know, retired generals say pro-military things.
But when you get
the Shinsekis and the Shalakashvilis out there saying, no, wait, stop. You know, we tried to smarten up the chumps on this one. Then you begin to realize that some of this is dummied up.
You know, it's like the whole thing, you know, with Shinseki. You know, here he is, and he's saying, you know, you got to have 300,000 to 400,000 people at a bare minimum. And they're essentially saying, go sit in the corner, please. Who cares if you're the head of it? You'll be out of here in 2 months. Go sit in the corner.
What? 500,000 trips? Hey, you know what? You're late for your retirement party. I know. Hey, Luke, I got to roll on, brother.
Sorry, bud. Stay easy.
Bye now.
Ah.
Our buddy Luke calling in from Knoxville, Tennessee. That's the show for tonight. By the way, thank you to all of you who contribute to keep the horn on the air. I'm proud to say that we have reached the $1,400 mark for the month of April. We are still a long way from out of the hole. We're a long way from the $2,000 it takes to keep us going every month. $600 or so. So if you haven't participated this month, it would certainly, if you can, and if you are willing, be wonderful if you did. PayPal buttons on the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com page. Or you can always use snail mail to Head On 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. Sure would be nice to not have to say this anymore for the rest of the month. You know what I mean? I know you know what I mean. On his way, Peter Godbold with another edition of Strictly Confidential, the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio program. Many thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer. Many thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, who almost single-handedly saved liberal talk on the internet with the archives at whiterosesociety.org. He's raising funds, too, and needs your help if you can. whiterosesociety.org. Also, of course, each show on the horn is brought to you in part by the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. You can be a part of Coal River Mountain Watch. Go to the website and learn how. And always, 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 RMR, Gina. It's all for you.
evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome. Welcome to book, chapter, and verse 133 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio exclusively right here on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network. Also brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch. That's crmw.net. Please stop by Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and have a look at what mountaintop removal is doing to West Virginia. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Monday, April 21st, 2008. So if you're listening on a Monday evening, April 21, 08, shortly after 9 p.m. Eastern, you are indeed listening to a live show, and you are welcome to call in and participate with myself and to the guest I'll be introducing shortly. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. The toll line, in case you have unlimited long distance, you'll save the studio a nickel or a buck, is area code 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333, and that rings in West Virginia. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. That's Peter at headonradionetwork.com. So you're more than welcome to participate in the show either by calling one of the two numbers or sending an email. You can also join us at the show in the chat room, which is active as I speak. You'll find a link to the chat room at strictlyconfidentialradio.com. In addition to the chat room, you'll find links to the guests' websites and to the audio archives from all of the past shows, and the chat room is active as I speak, a good night to stop in. You'll find links